Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming to this CCNSO technical day. My name is Dr. Eberhard Lisser. Actually, no, it's not. Of course it's not. My name is Nigel Roberts from the Guernsey Registry. Dr. Lisser is here in spirit only, as he's been prevented from attending by the Spanish air traffic controllers' strike. So he's either somewhere in Spain or between Spain and Germany right now and can't get out of Europe until the 12th. Whether that's an advantage or a disadvantage, I'll let you make up your own minds about that. Welcome to what Dr. Lisser has been calling cartage.na by virtue of a misplaced dot. It's my very great pleasure to introduce to you, as keynote speaker for this technical day, Jay Daly from the NZ Registry.
Thank you. I think keynote speaker is a bit strong. I'm doing the opening remarks on the session. We've all had a...
Just let me big you up, all right?
Thank you. We've all had a very interesting and busy year, and I think that's reflected very nicely in the agenda for today. I think this is one of the few agendas where we are really filling it out with people's experiences, particularly with people sharing with us experience of things that have gone wrong and what they've learnt from it. So we've got to start off, we have Luis Espinosa, who's come from Costa Rica, who's going to be telling us about managing DNS infrastructure changes and the experience that they have from there. Then we'll be having Andre Philippe from the Czech Registry coming to talk to us about their transition from NSEC to NSEC 3, the first registry to do that, and the problems and the successes they had with that as well. Then we'll be hearing from our corporate sponsor, Frank Bruno of Iron Mountain, talking about DNS and other escrow. And I would also point to you at the same time to some work being undertaken in the IETF by JPRS and ICANN, looking at escrow data formats for registries, same time. Then we have Irina Daniela from .ru telling us about their IDN transition and the registration growth that they've had there. Then we have the host presentation from Nikolai Bezanov today, telling us about their transition as well to the new .co and their risk strategy and risk management and how that's worked very nicely for them. Then just before lunch, we have our future-looking session for today hosted by Nigel, which is looking at how we put policy information into the DNS, and that's a panel session full of several notorious criminals within our organisations. Sorry, that was Nigel's description. Then after lunch, we have Roy Ahrens from .UK telling us about their recent problems and what they've learned from that with DNSSEC signing. Then at 10 past three, to remind us of looking forward to the future, we have Pavel Tuma from .cz telling us about Enum. It's a general introduction to Enum and a state of play of Enum, particularly within Europe, for us to learn from. We have a venue change later, and then we're moving to a roundtable hosted by Simon McCallough from .UK about DNSSEC without the jargon. Now, you particularly need to come along to this because there will be a short play in the middle of that, organised by Norm Ritchie, with various well-known people acting out parts of servers and threats and viruses and these sorts of things. I will be disappearing to learn my lines later. And then, assuming all goes well, we'll have Norm Ritchie back again for the closing remarks today. So today is going to be, we hope, a very successful session of sharing of experiences. We are, of course, disappointed that Dr. Liz is not here to shout at anybody from the front today. So if anybody particularly feels they need to do that job, then please let Nigel know and you can sit on the end and do that. But otherwise, I think we're all very much looking forward to today. So thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Jay. And without any further ado, we'll move into our first presentation. I think I'll just check to see whether or not we've got it on the screen. Gabby? Yes, excellent. Lewis, would you like to inform us further, please?
Yes. Good morning. My motivation for this presentation is we always like to speak about success projects and very good experience implementing things. But in this case, I think it's a good process in the learning process to share some bad experience too. It's a good way to learn too. Then we have not so good experience in our NIC with doing some changes. Then my idea is to present some of this experience. I call the presentation DNS infrastructure changes, that kind of changes we need all the time to do, and what was the good things, the bad things, and the ugly things, because we had ugly things in this. Okay? I will talking about, give a little introduction, explain how the DNS in general is impacted by failures and changes. And our case, a case of the NIC Internet Costa Rica, some lessons we learned, and the conclusions. Okay. DNS stability is like a maneuvering through the mud or snow. So you can do changes suddenly. It's like it's not so good looking, but it's a bike on the mud terrain. Then we can turn back or turn left or turn right suddenly because you can fall out. Then the stability of DNS is not exact science. It's not so precisely to do changes. You need to take account some time to take changes, and it's not so easy to do changes suddenly. What could be the impacts of failures in DNS systems? A failure in a small part of the system can affect the stability of the whole system because it's a global system. Okay, many failures can be anticipated because the nature of the DNS is a global system, and it depends on other external parts. And these are many variables to take in account. By example, a typo error can affect the system heavily, and this had been happened to many times, and we can see many things affected, many people affected with these failures, not only in the small CCT of these managers. A single failure can affect thousands of node users or clients simultaneously. This is a fact. And it could be happening to the big and small DNS managers. The difference for the big ones is it will be a world news, and for the most ones is only in-house issue. But the failure can affect many people. Okay, our case, we only need to do a not so heavy change. We are moving from have only one son.tr, which include the different sectors, that .co.tr for commercial, .fi, .tr for finance, for example. And we want to split the son in 8 different son files and different startup authority files. And the change we need to do is automated the domain transactions using the FRET from Czech Republic. And we have a really development end-user system without an interface with the DNS tables. Then we need to automate this, and we are using FRET in this. And some hardware changes, but it's not a big thing. Okay, in the preparation for this, we test everything in a controlled environment. We verify consistency between the existing domains and domain generated by the system, and we need to check that everything is there because we can affect one client, one customer with this. And we notify the customers about the improvements in our infrastructure. Okay. when we made the change, we have, I don't know, maybe some problems with this. When we split the zone, we didn't take into account the delegation of the new zone. This is sound funny, but when we are changes, we are doing changes in our test environment. The technical people only create the new zones and change the split the zone manually. Then we run the script to do it automatically. We didn't take into account that manually change, and we failed with that. When we realize in short time, then we can get into the server to do change to make that everything works well with the change in the zones. But two slave servers takes too long to refresh the new zones changes. Then we made changes, and two servers did not refresh the zone for a long time, maybe 8 hours, something like that. These servers have been operational for more than 10 years without changes or failures. But in this time, it's simple. It didn't refresh the zone. And because 10 years ago, it was a different people in charge of that, and then it was too difficult to find people in charge. Then it takes for us a week to establish a communication with technical people at the facility where is located the servers. It's a week. It's a long time for change a mistake. Okay. what was our actions in this? We rolled back the change, and we tried to roll back to the state before, but it's wet mud. And if you try to roll back, it's not so easy because the refresh is affected too. Then if we try to roll back the change, it's not working well, especially with these two servers. And these two servers resolve for many people too. Okay, we need to investigate the cause of the problems and try to improve the procedures because we have many failures and procedures. Some are problems. Some slave server doesn't refresh the rollback changes too. Then we are stuck in the middle of a huge problem because we have, at this, for many hours, we have two different SOM files. And after that, 1 week later, we realize there's a network latency where is the master server is located, but it has enough bandwidth, but it's not the issue. The issue is the latency, because this latency, the slave servers didn't refresh because timeout. It's making a timeout to refreshing the zones. And we realized too that the contact information for the management of these slave servers was outdated or inexistent, and it takes a week to try to find the problem. When we call to this provider, they even don't know us. They don't know nothing about us. They have our secondary service, but they don't know anything about us. Then we try to explain many times, and they take you to one, to other office to try to explain what was happening, and try to ask them if they can refresh the server. Okay, other findings. We work so hard in the keep the integrity of the data during transition, but left behind some small details in the DNS system. By example, the problem with the zone transfer. We didn't test well the zone transfer process before doing changes, because we are focused on that if the information on the website or who is translated, completed to the DNS system. And we need to check many changes, many differences in that. And we left behind that small details, but with a huge impact. we underestimate the impact of the rollback when doing change in CCTLD SON delegation. This is different from any other system. In any other system, if you have a typo error, you have a bug in the system, and you can revert changes and keep the old code, and that's it. But in DNS, if you go for changes and you need to roll back, it's not so easy. Okay, some lesson learned. We need to improve the planning process. In this process, very few people working on the changes. We need to include more eyes. It's one of the things we learned. And the main thing, don't leave these things in inclusive hands of technical people. We are a little lost sometimes. Then we are not so good with that details, with details with every aspect. We need other people to see what is happening and to manage these kind of things. And even if the change looks like technical change, we need a different kind of management of these changes. What was the good thing about this, and why I want to explain this in this meeting? I want to show this in this meeting. It's because it's very good to learn from bad experience. It's not always a good thing to learn from very good experience. And probably we learn more in bad experience, in making mistakes, than viewing the good things working or view the good thing running well, and everything is good. But it's not the real thing. Not always everything is good. What is the bad in this? In a global distributed system with many variables of type, like the DNS system, it is impossible to anticipate all possible problems. You can mitigate. You can management some risk in these kind of changes, but it's impossible to anticipate all the variables, all the things can be failed. And we learn of this that the ugly thing in the DNS system is even a simple thing like a rollback change takes huge time to be effective in the DNS systems. This is because the times to lift of the records, the cache systems, and everything is working together, and is not instantly. The changes is not instantly. Then you cannot do changes so fast and see the changes or see the effect of the changes immediately. It takes some time, always. I take a little less time than I expect for this. Questions? Yes, Jay.
What type of organizations are running slave servers for you?
Yes, at the beginning of the NIC, we look for partners to establish a secondary service. Some of these organizations are ISPs, another is regional registrars, managers, and CCTLD friends that runs this. The problem was with some ISP because the establishment of secondary service with this ISP was negotiated too many years ago. Then the people with what's negotiated is not there. Then, and it's not a formal service for that. It's just an agreement of friends, like internet at the beginning. It's just an agreement of friends. Then we never had a problem before with that service. And sometimes we want to change it, but if it's working well, we don't need to change that service. From this bad experience, or from this, we now are improving in the review all our slave servers around the world, looking for something more formal, looking for agreements, something like that, that can help us to establish a more controlled environment of our secondary, our slave servers. We are a small CCTLD. We do have resources to have secondaries around the world owned by our own resources. Then we need to do some agreements to other CCTLD, to other people or ISPs to establish this secondary service. From this experience, we go through the transaction logs to see from where is the most of the queries to the DNS system, or part of the globe. Then we find some things, unbelievable things. I don't know, it's unbelievable. But it was very strange for us. See, there's many, many queries from Russia, from Ukraine, and from Asia, And that CR is not huge CCTLD, or it's only local CCTLD. Then it was surprising for us to see if most of the queries come from United States, but many queries come from Asia and from West Europe. Then now we are working to try to establish secondary service near these geographical regions. Then we need to look forward some people to make some agreements or partnership with this secondary service.
If anybody else has got any more questions, put your hand up, and I'll bring you the microphone so that the remote participation people can hear. Jay again.
Thank you. At what level of latency did these zone transfers start to fail? How long was the latency then?
It was very strange because this latency affect only one provider. The other three or four providers do the transfer well. Then I'm not so sure, but the latency is around 2 seconds or something like that. When the server asks for the zone transfer or the system, I don't know why, but their systems only wait 2 seconds or something like that. If no answer, the system gives a timeout and close the connection. I'm not so sure why the latency for that system is too heavy. Then we find that we are using the University of Costa Rica provider to store the master server. Then they have a huge bandwidth, something like 150 megabits per second to provide service to internet, and the bandwidth is not completely full. It's a little, but it's enough bandwidth because our server use less than 1 megabit per second to provide all the queries. But the latency is sometimes there's peaks of latency. Then this kind of behavior of the traffic affects that specifically secondary service. That's very interesting, we find.
Any more questions for Luis?
Good day.
Three's your limit, Ray.
Okay, one more. Do you now have a test bed system for testing DNS changes of a primary and some secondaries so that you can see how that works beforehand? Or?
Okay. In a test bed, we need to simulate near real-world things. Then we don't have enough resources to create a test bed in that scale. And then we are working on trying to simulate many things as we can. But the first thing is establish a good communication with all the holders of the secondary servers to do tests with them, because one of our failures was we didn't do tests with our secondary servers with the people. We didn't establish communication before we do the changes, because we think we need only generate the changes in our master server and all the changes are replicated to the secondaries and that's it. But this is not the fact. The fact that we need to establish a good communication with the owner of the servers and make tests in a real environment before doing a real change. Okay, we are working on that.
Muchas gracias. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed. Muchas gracias. Our next speaker is André Philippe, who is going to talk about NSSEC to NSSEC 3. NSSEC, that's how you pronounce it, isn't it?
Major, I think you are the native speaker. You should tell me how I should pronounce it.
I don't speak jargon as well as some people.
Okay, so good morning, everyone. I prepared some, although it's about a very technical topic, a presentation about a very technical topic, I prepared some quite high-level presentation. So do not expect any really deep details. Do not expect some part of the zones and zone file and nothing like that. But this presentation should be just some information and maybe warning that transition or changing of algorithm in DNSSEC, it's quite complex process, and if you plan to do that, be ready for some complication, for some issues you need to go through. So first of all, let me explain you what is the history of DNSSEC in Czech Republic and what was the reason we made the change, what was the background, why we get to that situation. We started DNSSEC technically on April the 4th, 2008, that time we signed the Enum zone. We basically used many times Enum zone as a first step before we implement some change in the ccTLD zone, because of course this is not so heavily used and any fault that would appear in that zone, or the people are more tolerant to any problems in that zone than in the ccTLD. So we use many times, and I think I will discuss it later as well, that we use Enum before implementing change in the .cz zone. So we signed Enum zone in April the 4th, and then we signed .cz zone on September 2nd, 2008. So we were something like fifth country in the world who implemented who deployed DNSSEC. A month later, or at the end of September, we opened the registry for end-users public key registration, which is in many registries DS records. We have a little bit different system. We accept the key records, the whole key, because we calculate DS records on behalf of the end-users, which is good for reusing keys for multiple domains. So the end-user just submit one record to a registry, and it can be used for multiple domains. But that's not important for the NSSEC to NSSEC thing. We started with NSSEC because that time, which is more than 2 years ago, there was no other option. The NSSEC 3 was not widely developed, deployed. It was not possible to start with NSSEC 3. And we knew that time that there was a problem with zone walking. We were a little bit afraid of that, so we consulted this problem with Personal Data Protection Office, and they told us that they are fine with the fact that people will be able to list all domains. However, we were not very happy with that. That was the only possible way how to start up DNSSEC in Czech Republic. And 1.5 years ago, after that, the root zone was signed, so we were... It was the first moment we were some sort of free to change the key without informing all the people in the country, because in the beginning many people used our key as a trust anchor, and it would be quite hard to change that the key in before the root was signed. So what was the reasons for the rollover? The current key, or the key at that time, was published 2 years ago, so it was quite a long time in live production. Since the DNSSEC implementation, after the DNSSEC implementation, we faced some zone walking. We also saw some people that wanted to minor data. They wanted to walk through our database. So the number of such attacks a little bit increased. So the fact that the people had indexes to our database helped them to try to mine our database. There were also some technical reasons. In the beginning, we used SHA-1 algorithm, which is now not recommended anymore. There are some known cryptographic attacks against SHA-1, so we definitely needed to change the algorithm. So we decided to use SHA-2 family, which is now recommended by NIST for some next years. And NIST recommendation is usually accepted by Europeans and the Czech standardization office as well. So that's usually the key document we read about the cryptography. And there was one side effect which we, of course, didn't plan in the beginning, but this rollover increased the awareness of DNSSEC in the country, because we contacted many administrators. We told them that there's going to be a change, that they should do something, and we informed them again that there is some DNSSEC and then should somehow deal with that. So what was the current situation? We had about 15% of our domains is signed currently. It's more than 100,000 domains, which is the highest number in the world, and it's probably more than all the world together. So it's a huge number of domains. And we expect that some more will come, that we will be able to increase that percentage in our zone file. That's why when we were trying to answer the question whether we should use NSEC3 with opt-out or just the pure NSEC3, we decided to use the pure NSEC3 because we don't think that NSEC3 with opt-out would significantly reduce the zone file size in the future, as we want to grow the number of signed domains. So that's why we chose NSEC3. And now to the algorithm rollover. It's very, very different from a simple key rollover. So if some of you have experience with key rollover, this is completely different thing, so be aware of that. It's pretty complex process. It took us almost a month to implement, technically 21 days plus some preparation phase. And the reason why is it so complex is in RFC 4035, section 2.2. There is written how there's something about protection against algorithm downgrade attacks. So there is written that every algorithm which is in DS records has to be in Apex, and it has to have a assigned resource record in the zone. So knowing that, we set up a testing environment. We replicated the whole environment in the laboratory, and we made a lot of simulations, a lot of testing. Surprisingly, the implementations by the major major software solutions have some bugs, which we found actually at that time. So we did a lot of testing, and then when we saw that we have the right steps, we also made the first test on Enum as before. The steps how to do a algorithm rollover are described in RFC 4641 bis. It's not still a final version in section 415, again you have to have a signature of again you have to have key of with of the array algorithm in a zone for which you have DS records, and you have a signature for every algorithm in APEX. So it's quite complex. So that results that you end up with double signed zone. So you have a zone in some stage. You have a zone with an old algorithm completely signed with that, and also signed with a new algorithm. So the zone is now double signed, which means it's probably double arch or even more, because the new algorithm usually takes some more data. So that's the problem you need to have. What were the steps of the rollover? We generated new keys. We prepared DNS infrastructure. We of course started a communication with resolver operators. We explained them that there is that the root is signed, that we need to change an algorithm, that they shouldn't use .cz as trust anchor anymore, that they should use root zone as a trust anchor. Then we added a new resource record signatures and waited for TTL. And then we added new DNS keys and also waited for a while for TTL and so on. Then we requested exchange of DS records in a root zone. At the time, we were in root zone, in ITER, in DLV, which is different from now, because ITER is going to be phased out. It doesn't have any data currently. And then we waited some time for implementation of those changes. The change in root zone was pretty quick. It took 2 days. But removal from ITER took 14 days because there was no procedure for removing DS records at the time, so it took IANA some time to implement this change. And DLV was tied with ITER, so as soon as ITER was changed, DLV was changed as well. And then we are able to remove all DNS keys and wait some time for DTL, for all the caching resolvers. And finally, we were able to remove all the signatures make with the old algorithm. So it looks pretty easy, but it takes roughly 1 month, and you need to be very careful that you don't make any mistake in that. The problem we saw with resolvers, for example, we found out that Bind9 is quite tolerant, that it can... It accepts the fact that there are keys, but there are no resource record signatures, which is against RFC. But Bind9 just ignores the fact that that was a problem, because then we in testing environment we didn't see that this zone is invalid. The same problem was that it didn't set up AD bit between step 5 and 6, which means between removal old keys and remove old. Resource record signatures. Unbound was a little bit better. It's more stricter. It follows all the standards. And then it found out the problem if you add a DNS key with the new algorithms and you don't sign the rest of the zone. So you need to test all the implementation that are on the market to be sure that the change will be accepted. And so what was the lessons we learned? First of all, do the testing, prepare for that. It's not an easy change. Make a test lab. Some implementation details differ, so you need to test not just various daemons, the software resolvers, but also various versions, because they differ from version to version. The timing is very important. You need to really wait for a certain amount of time. If you would do something quicker, you may cause a failure in resolvers. And the last thing, which is interesting, you need to plan your DNS infrastructure properly, especially in terms of memory, because if you signed your zone today, it's very probable that sometime in the future you will need to make an algorithm change, maybe not because you will change from NSEC to NSEC3, but because you will see that your current algorithm is too weak and you maybe would like to upgrade the algorithm. And in that case, you will need to sign your zone twice, so which means you have to be ready or you have to have some enough memory for double zones, or more, probably more than double zones than you currently have. So think of it before you implement the change. And that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Andre. Any questions, please raise your hand and I'll be bringing your microphone so the remote participation people can hear you. Not even Jay.
Were you surprised that you needed to do the double signing in that particular way?
We are not. I think it's not the thing you is well known. I'm afraid it's something you don't expect, because if you think of like a manager about key rollover, you think, well, we did key rollover many times, so you think it's the same process. But I just wanted to point out that if you change the algorithm, it's a different process. It's much more complex, and you have to be ready for that. So if you plan it, you need to ensure that your infrastructure is on a certain level and so on.
I suppose my question is, do you think it is too complex a process?
It's a hard question. Probably it is, but that's necessary. We didn't find any easier way how to do it. If you want to be protected against downgrade algorithm attack, you need to have such complex process. That's okay. But I can say it's too complex or it's not too complex. It's just the way it is.
Any more questions over here? He's already got the microphone.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a newcomer here, so it may be a stupid question. But
there are no stupid questions, and you're very welcome.
I wonder if this presentation material will be posted somewhere.
The presentations, I think, will be on the CCNSO website. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay. Any further questions? Well, with that, thank you. Andre will be chairing this afternoon, so you'll see him again. Well, when I read on the agenda that Eberhard had produced that Frank Bruno was going to be here, I wondered whether or not I should bring my boxing gloves. Frank, if you'd like to come up and give your presentation. Frank Bruno was a famous British boxer.
An English statesman.
Okay. Frank's from Iron Mountain. He's going to talk about DNS and other escrow. Give us a moment. We'll see if we can get the presentation up on the screen. There we go.
There we go. Good morning, everyone. My name is Frank Bruno, and I'm with Iron Mountain. And I'm not sure how many people are familiar with our company. Has everybody heard of Iron Mountain before? Seen our trucks? Our primary business is in the area of records and information management. Here are just some statistics about our company. We're a rather large company. We grew through acquisition. Over the past 10 years, we've expanded into Europe, and we're now in 37 countries, five continents. We've invested in a tremendous amount of space above ground and below ground to protect the world's information. So as you look at the middle section here, we have 18-plus petabytes of data protected and managed, over 20,000 servers, 3 million PCs. We're protecting right now currently about 9.1 billion emails that companies need to protect their interests or to defend themselves against some claim or for business continuity purposes. It's the same with the Internet. We've been working with the Internet since 2001, backing up the Whois data. Currently, we are one of about three companies that provide data escrow services to support registry and registrar data, we were selected by ICANN in 2007 to support the registrar data escrow as a requirement under your registrar accreditation agreements because of an occurrence. I believe it was a small registrar that had failed a company called Registry Fly, and that kind of set things in motion. And you know, lo and behold, we had been doing the very same thing on the registry side, but now it made sense to also back up the data or to escrow the data for the registrars as well. So what is a registry data escrow? Basically, it's a symbol of trust between the registries, the registrars, and the registrants, the owners of the domain names. And if there were some sort of business failure, Iron Mountain would be able to supply a copy of the data in escrow to support the registrant's claim of ownership, to help ICANN or the registry restore their databases, and to ensure, you know, business continuity as it relates to the domains that are online. Who escrows? You know, they're right now, pretty much everybody is doing the escrow. In fact, Iron Mountain is you know, hot on the trail of the new GTLD requirements that have been set forth, and we are right now posturing ourselves with some of the world's leading registry operators like Afilias, Neustar, Urban Brain, Aus Registry, those kinds of companies. And so, you know, you'll probably hear more of us. If you here in the room are running a CCTLD registry, you know, there may not be any specific requirement by, you know, a governmental body, you know, whether it's your government or whether it's some other interest group that is pressuring you to establish that quote-unquote symbol of trust. But a data escrow can certainly do a lot for you in terms of instilling trust with the registrant community. That's the one thing that, you know, you don't hear very often when you come to these things is, you know, what about the registrants, you know, who we're here to represent? And those are the folks who decide whether or not to register domain names within the CCTLD. So it may not be a huge consideration, but, you know, knowing that there is continuity in the CCTLD registry by having a registry data escrow archive in place with Iron Mountain may be something that, you know, tips the scale in your favor and prompts them to register additional domain names in your CCTLD. Not sure, but, you know, it's certainly something nice to reflect on your website if people are contemplating registering domain names in that particular CCTLD, in your CCTLD. So what goes into a registry data escrow? Well, it starts with a contract, like anything else. It's a three-party contract. It may also be a four-party contract, depending on whether or not you would include the registry service operator. And if they have roles and responsibilities, then it certainly makes sense to have them as a contract party to the agreement as well. But the first party is the escrow agent, and Iron Mountain has registry data escrow agreements that have been evolved over the years with the help of ICANN. We also have the registry, which is, you know, the depositor responsible for putting that who is data, that authoritative data, into escrow. And then the beneficiary, who would get access to that data should something happen to the depositor, is also the regulatory body. So in the case of generic top-level domains, it is ICANN. But for various CCTLDs, it may be the government, your government, that requires that, maybe some special interest group who requires that the data be placed into escrow so that there is independent access through a neutral third party. That neutral third party is Iron Mountain. And our role is to make sure that the deposits are made. So we physically receive, or I should say we electronically receive deposits encrypted. We do exchange keys, so we make sure that the data is fully protected as it travels through the internet. Once it's received, we verify receipt. We will, report back via email to the depositor. Sometimes we also send, depending on what it says in the contract, we'll also send confirmation to the beneficiary, letting them know that the deposits have been made and that certain file sizes are there. And, you know, unless somebody requires that we do further testing to the deposit, you know, down to the registrant information level to verify deposits, you know, that completes the deposit. We generally receive daily incremental deposits, so any changes from yesterday to today are sent in, and then we'll receive one full weekly deposit from the registry operator. The release conditions that govern the data in escrow generally include joint written instructions. So if the parties wish that we release the data to the beneficiary, you know, then we, you know, we'll act on those instructions. If the registry agreement has expired, perhaps, or has been terminated, that may also be a release condition. Usually Iron Mountain does not deny any court orders. We will provide information to the parties, advising them of what's being asked of us by the governmental body or the, you know, court of competent jurisdiction. If there is a release condition that speaks to ceased business operations, or if there is a release condition tied to the depositor's ability to continue doing business in the ordinary course, you know, force majeure, acts of God, can take out a building, can take out a data center, render them useless. And so, you know, again, they'll come to Iron Mountain for business continuity purposes so we can help restore the databases and keep people, comforted knowing that they have access to their domain names. So what goes into escrow and how? Well, obviously the data relative to a domain name registrant, you've got the contact details for the registered domain holder, the name servers, expiration dates. If it's an internationalized domain name, the A labels would go in there. The formats, for generic top-level domains, ICANN has a very specific format, which is rather lengthy, and I'm not, I don't speak jargon like Nigel here, so I would defer to the ICANN website if you wanted to follow that format. But if you had a desire and the parties had not established any particular format, then, you know, we're generally open. Whatever you would send us, we'll store and protect for you. It's always a good idea to compress and encrypt the deposits to make sure that we're being economical about it, not taking up too much space, and then making sure that the data is secure by having the standard encryption technology applied. And then again, the uploads take place on a daily basis. We're looking for incremental data on a daily basis, or you can, and in addition to sending in a full deposit on a weekly basis. It's generally transmitted through file transfer protocol. I mean, nothing too difficult. You know, we utilize secure file transfer protocol, and we also verify it at the time that it's received. So, you know, that's the that's the basis of our service. So where does your data go, and how do you know that it's safe? We have redundant underground facilities located in the U.S. In fact, you know, our national underground storage facility was built by the U.S. government and sold to Iron Mountain Iron Mountain continues that relationship with the U.S. government by protecting, storing and protecting the National Archives. There are, I'm not sure of the number, but there it's in the hundreds, Fortune 1000 companies that are maintaining data center space in this underground facility. It is about 100 feet below a limestone hardened surface outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's very, very secure, and that is where all of the generic top-level domain registry and registrar data is currently stored. There is also a redundant location outside of Kansas City, which is another underground facility where we back up or we co-locate that data. So it is very well protected. We do also perform physical tape backups. Interesting thing about the registry and registrar data in escrow, it's not as voluminous as you think. You know, with common delimited files, you can compress those to a very manageable state. So it does fit on tapes, and we've got the best processes in place to make sure that those are very secure. So. So with that, why would you consider a data escrow? Well, again, I mentioned that you would solve your customer's data protection concerns, but also establishing trust with registrants is always a good idea. If there's an opportunity to increase the number of registrations within the CCTLD or GTLD. Making mention that you have a data escrow in place with Iron Mountain, there's kind of proof positive that goes along with it. It's almost like having an ISO certification at the ready. So how would you do it? Well, if your particular country code top-level domain has a governing body that is interested in seeing the TLD grow, or if they have a regulatory requirement to place data in escrow on behalf of the registrants, then you would obviously need to come to an agreement with that other party. There may be considerations relative to sharing in the costs for getting the escrow in place, because obviously there's a cost for putting an escrow agreement in place and for making deposits and for being a beneficiary to the escrow agreement. You would obviously need to select an escrow agent and review a three-party contract with them, and then obviously agree on format data, or data format rather, that would be written into the escrow contract. And then when everything is agreed upon and signed, we would go ahead and set it up in our system and walk you through the process of beginning the deposits. So future developments, we are talking to CCTLD registries every day. We are also doing some deposit auditing right now for ICANN. So the GTLDs that deposit with us, and I take that back, the registrars that are depositing with us are being audited by Iron Mountain, and we're reporting back to ICANN. And what we're finding is that there's a number of different discrepancies that will occur, different fields that don't necessarily populate to the string searches that we're performing on those deposits. So it's helping us to evolve. And before long, we'll be performing some outreach to inform the masses, inform the registrars of the correct way to deposit with us, so that we have a consistent data format that is usable by ICANN. Should it be necessary to get a release on that? The new GTLD specifications, the Internet Engineering Task Force is working on a new format again. That is, out of my my scope of knowledge as it relates to the different formats, but I would encourage you to go onto the ICANN website if you want to learn more about that. And that's pretty much about it. Does anybody have any questions about data escrow?
Yeah, questions, if you just raise your hand, and Gabby will run round. Stephen Deahake.
Can you elaborate on your safe harbor provisions for EU privacy issues? I saw it on a slide there a few slides mm-hmm. back.
Yes, Iron Mountain was one of the first companies to obtain safe harbor certification. It is a self-certification, but essentially, if there was a data breach, you know, it is our responsibility to report, so full disclosure, and assume responsibility for that data breach. And it is it is Iron Mountain's core process to protect and secure the world's information. So we kind of find ourselves, you know, in a market leading position with respect to, you know, to what we do with that data. And you know, the safe harbor, I believe there's 27 European countries that subscribe to safe harbor allow Iron Mountain to store data outside of their borders, and that's really what it's all about, you know. And we do submit to the safe harbor agreement if required. If we've got the certification, we renew it every year. There is a self certification. Basically, it's, you know, we utilize SysTrust to authenticate our safe harbor certifications, and if required, you know, we don't have a problem signing the additional safe harbor paperwork that goes along with exporting data outside of the borders of your country.
Any further questions from the floor? Jay, what a surprise.
Are Iron Mountain contributing to the IETF work on standardized data escrow format? And if not, would you consider throwing some of your considerable resources towards helping that project?
Good question.
That's an excellent question, Jay. Thanks for asking that. The answer is yes. We are keeping an eye on the blog that's been circulating back and forth between the constituents involved with the new formats, and we understand which directions they're kind of weighing towards. Understand our position. You know, Iron Mountain is a neutral third party, and while we have a desire to see, you know, certain formats that allow us to easily handle it and manage it and return it to one of the contract parties of the data escrow, we don't necessarily have any strong interest in seeing, you know, certain pieces of information placed in escrow. You know, we advocate that we hold and protect every bit of information necessary to restore ownership to the registrant. So that in of itself is you know, encompasses our interest in what goes into what the IETF is doing right now. Aside from that, you know, we're just making sure that what we see happening is operationally supportable by Iron Mountain.
Thank you. Patricio.
Thank you. Patricio Poblete from NICCHILE. You mentioned you've been talking to CCTLDs, and for some CCTLDs, a hostile redelegation is sometimes a concern, cause of concern, and I imagine some people in our community wouldn't want to do anything that would make that easier. Does that issue come up in your talks with the CCTLDs? And also, do you have, are you right now doing escrow for any CCTLDs, and who are the contracting parties in those agreements?
Well, I we are subject to confidentiality. I can say right now that we have sponsored GTLDs that are specific to countries that we're doing business with right now. We have not signed on any CCDLDs as of late. But I will comment on, you know, the dynamic or the difference between the GTLDs and the CCTLDs. You know, CCTLDs are commonly run, you know, by university offices or you know, governmental agencies within a particular country. Oftentimes, we find them to be underfunded, understaffed. And with a pretty heavy workload. I'm not sure if the folks in this room are aware, but Iron Mountain used to be a registrar. We were actually registering domain names, and it wasn't necessarily core to our business. We divested this past year, but we understand the pain that a registrar goes through when dealing with CCTLD registries. I mean, it's just, I'm sorry, it's the nature of the world today, and we would strongly advocate for a data escrow for several reasons. I mean, number one, you want to grow the registrations for your CCTLD. You're understaffed, underfunded. You know, growing the registry is the only way to gain more funding and more staff, in my opinion. I mean, that's just business. If you are trying to attract new registrants and there is the threat of physical destruction to the data center or to the infrastructure running the registry data, then certainly you want to impress upon anybody considering a registration that the data is protected in escrow with a neutral third party, potentially in a different country, you know. So that is what you use to instill trust with prospective buyers. Did that answer your question? Okay. We could talk more about it. We're booth number 7, and we've got some collateral that we can share with you, and if anybody is interested in having further discussions about it, we'll be around all week.
Do we have any more questions from the floor? If not, I have a question. We have one.
One over here.
Christina.
Hello. This is from Mr. Theo Kramer, who's participating remotely. And he would like to know some more about the verification process to ensure that the data in escrow is correct.
We love that question. We do, because we don't believe in executing an escrow agreement unless you make sure that what gets placed in the deposit is actually usable. You know, in that case, if it's not usable, you've wasted money on an escrow agreement. So verification is of utmost importance. We generally get into the deposits. We open up the data files. Oftentimes, you know, an initial check would be to run a virus scan to provide file listing or file classification tables if there are various file types associated with the deposit. Generally, that's not the case. Generally, it's just one or two file types that we're getting. So opening up the file types, the files that we get, is the first step in the process. And then we will access the WHOIS data that's available in the public domain, and we compare it. And we compare the you know, the administrative contacts, the technical contacts, the billing contacts, the renewal dates to make sure that they're accurate. Generally, what we'll do is we will take a sampling of about 60 domain names, and we'll check one. We check about 140 deposits per month for ICANN, and that's what we do. But, you know, again, that's based on the scope that was developed between Iron Mountain and ICANN. If we're working with you and there were some budget limitations, we would agree on something between what we're doing for ICANN and what's appropriate for your budget.
Hope that answered your question, Theo. Any more from the floor before Chairman's privilege? One more from the remote participation?
Yes, this is from Mark. And he asks, what level of protection do the Iron Mountain storage facilities provide against environmental issues such as EM radiation, flooding, etc.?
Well, I would have to say I'm not familiar with the various levels, but if it is not the highest level, I would be surprised because, again, the facility that we are currently domiciling, the servers that protect the GTLD registry and registrar data, is located in a facility 100 feet below the Earth's surface, and it can withstand I believe it's a 100 megaton atomic blast. So if that's not the highest level, I'm not sure what is.
Yeah, thank you very much. My question is actually quite simple. Obviously, you've partially answered this when you said that currently you're not working with any CCTLDs, but you're working with sponsored GTLDs and possibly other GTLDs as well. My question is that if you're a small, as you say, underfunded and under-resourced CCTLD, what are you going to charge us? I mean, I'm not asking for a quote, because obviously it's subject to individual negotiation, but to give us some idea as to what the cost might be of this kind of protection if
sure.
you're a small CCTLD.
Right now, we have a published fee schedule. We have set up fees, and by the way, we've actually, you know, since 2001 when we started this business, we realized that we've actually gotten better at what we do, and by getting better, we're able to streamline and reduce cost. Driving cost out of the process was one of the things that we're proud of. But we now base our fees, our monthly fees, on the number of registrations that you have. Our set of fees are $5,000, and the starting monthly, I believe, is $450 a month for the lowest level of TLDs, and I think it runs up to 5 or 15,000 domain names, and it runs up from there. I will also say this: you know, it is uncharted waters for a lot of you. It's uncharted waters for Iron Mountain. You know, I just got done telling you that we don't do any registry data escrow with CCTLDs, only the sponsored or the generic, and they're pretty well funded. So understanding the dynamic will help us to tailor a program that meets your needs. I will say that the biggest cost associated with doing a data escrow isn't necessarily the money, but the time and effort required to get one in place, to convince the your superiors that you need one, to then negotiate the agreement and then get it in place and get it set up and get a process that is consistent and scheduled, I think is a greater cost than the money itself. In most cases. But that's a great question.
One more from the back. Can you just wait until the microphone reaches you so the remote people can hear?
The question is, do you have any facilities outside of the U.S.?
Yes, we do. We have several that we utilize not necessarily for data escrow, because you have to understand.
Yeah, for data escrow and
for data escrow, you know, it's a highly specialized process that's contained within a single office. And believe it or not, the servers are located in the underground facility outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but our staff is actually in San Diego, California. So there is some know-how relative to getting that done. I don't see a problem with establishing a deposit location outside of the country. We just haven't done that yet because of demand. So for economies, we're keeping it centralized to where we can, you know, we can maximize the efficiency. But we do have facilities that support our other lines of business outside of the United States. Specifically, we've got locations in Germany, in Belgium, in France, in Asia. I'm not quite sure if it's Hong Kong or if it's in Beijing. I'm not quite sure of that. But we also have facilities in Australia. So yeah, I mean, we would certainly consider establishing new deposit locations. It just, you know, it would have to go through the standard business process.
Okay, before I take one more from the remote participation room, just check to see if there are going to be any more questions. It's obviously provoked quite some interest and discussion. Okay, well, the final question comes sort of supplementary from Theo Kramer, and he says, do you limit the escrow purely to data, or will you cater for the registry system source code as well?
We would cater to the source code as well, but we often consider the release conditions. You know, an escrow agreement governs the release of the deposit materials that are entrusted to us. When you're talking about data, you know, data is something that you can access in the public domain anyway. So there's less risk to releasing data than there is someone's source code. Source code is a hybrid of patents, copyrights, and trade secrets that is considered intellectual property. So governing the release of source code is a little bit more stringent than data in escrow. So they're managed differently. And as a result, we would ask for a separate agreement and a separate deposit account to store and protect source code.
Okay, that's a great answer. Thank you very much for a great presentation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for the great questions. And again, if you need me, I'm in booth number 7.
Thank you. I think if, Irene, you don't need to rush, we'll take a 5-minute comfort break. And if anybody wants to get some juice or something, I think there's still some out there around the corner. So if we can be back here and maybe 4:22. We'll recommence with Irene's presentation and she can get set up in